I'm Jack Terry, and I've been a professor at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas for 47 years. And I teach in the School of Education, and I'm a senior professor of foundations. That's principles and philosophy and history of education. And I taught principles of teaching for 47 years, and that's what I'm here to work with you all tonight. This course is a course that's going to talk about putting a lesson plan together. And I'd like to begin by talking with you all about your material and your Sunday school quarterlies. Which quarterly do you all use here at First Baptist Church in Houston? What quarterlies do you use, or do you use any? Any at all? Do any of you use?
Some do and some don't.
Do some of you use the Bible book series?
Yes.
Some of you use Bible book. Do some of you use the other? What other materials do you got? Where do you get your material is my question. I don't know. I didn't have time to ask Ben.
Lifeway.
Yeah, that's where this comes from.
DesiringGod.com.
I'm sorry?
DesiringGod.com.
DesiringGod.com. Is that another place where you all get them?
It's Bethlehem Baptist Church.
Okay. All right. So you have a curriculum, right? And you all work with the curriculum every Sunday? You don't just come in and teach the Bible, do you? I mean, you have a curriculum. Am I assuming something that's not true? And who does the commentary for it? Okay, so you do your own commentary. Okay, all right. That's what I'm trying to find out. Because the thing that I want to talk with us tonight about is the fact of your being able to put a really good lesson plan together that meets the needs of your class, but at the same time, meets your need as the teacher. And what I'd like to do is begin, and what I gave you to start with was a couple of lesson plan outlines of just lesson plans that are put together. Every lesson plan is basically the same, no matter how you look at it. I write this material for the Sunday School Board. I've written for them for years, and Jeff Young, who was up there just a few moments ago, writes for Sunday School Board. We all write for them. I write my own material. On Sunday, I teach a class at Euless. My class had 125 people there last Sunday morning, and we run about 150 most of the time. We were kind of down last week because we had a flu bug that came through our little community out there. And so I have to write my own material, but we use quarterlies as well. But I want to help you all to understand that even if you use quarterlies, or if you get it from where?
TheBibleBook.com
or something?
The Bible.
Okay, the Bible in particular. Yeah. You have to teach it some way. You have to use something to teach it with, and that's what I'd like to talk with you all about. First thing I'd like to begin talking with you about is the fact that when you teach, you have to use some kind of activities to teach with, right? And what do we generally call those activities that we use? No, not reading scripture. That's part of it. I mean, that is an activity. But what kind of activity is that? Do y'all use methods in your teaching? Do you have a method? Do you use methods? Can any of you tell me what a teaching method? Not the inductive, but a method. Any of you use lecture in your teaching? You use lecture? Any of you use problem solving? Any of you use goal analysis? Any of you use any kind of activities like some of the books I have, case studies? Any of you use any of those in your lessons? They're all over. They're all over.
Case studies not found in the Bible?
Yeah. No, case studies that are developed with biblical texts attached to them.
Right, but not actual examples in the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Well, what do you use?
The Bible.
Okay, I'm with you on that one. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
We use case studies from the Bible, but you use case studies. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, I'm with you, and you stay with me because I want to take you through this. Let me kind of help you understand something. In the final analysis, there are only three ways to teach. Actually, there are only three ways to teach. There are only three ways that you can teach somebody something. And if you can come to understand the three ways that you teach somebody something, then you can come to understand how you build materials around that to teach them. For instance, you can tell people what you want them to know. Whenever you do lecture or whenever you use any kind of other audio device, whether it be a CD or a television or a movie, anytime you use that, you're telling people something. And one way we teach people is by telling them something. And that's a major way we teach. In fact, I'm going to take you into that just real quickly here. If you'll let me pass this up, because you have this in your material. I'd like to pass this up, and I'd like to get to right here. I'm passing this up, so don't worry about this. It's in your material. And I don't want to mess with this because I don't have time, quite frankly. I want to get to this. In the final analysis, there are only three ways to teach. Only three. The first way is what we call direct instruction. And that's where someone or something or something is telling the students what you want them to know. The majority of the time, it's you, the teacher. You become the instrument through which that kind of material flows. If you stop for a few moments and you start talking to your class, basically what you're doing is you're lecturing, right? And so lecturing is the kind of direct instruction activity that we often use. But there are more direct instruction activities than lecturing. And that's what I put into your materials, because we need to come to understand that. Now, let me help you understand. Direct instruction is a good way to teach. In fact, the majority of you would not be educated had you not been taught that way, right? In public school, most of the time, your teachers got up and they lectured to you. When you got to college, most of the time, your professor got up and lectured to you, right? Am I right or am I wrong? I'm right. And so direct instruction is a wonderful way to teach. It is boring as all get out, but it's a wonderful way to teach, right? And so direct instruction is the first way you can teach. That's where you are telling them something. That's the first way to teach. Now, there are many, many ways to do that. Many ways to do direct instruction. And I'm going to give you about 14 of them, and they're in your paper. That's why I gave you the paper. And you can look at all of it later and run through it. But there are, the first one that we really come to and understand is lecture. Now, a lot of people lecture a lot. In fact, I would be dead tonight up here if I didn't have the opportunity to lecture with learning devices. Now, here's the deal. If you lecture, never lecture without visuals at the board and at the desk. In fact, that's the major methodology of lecturing. Lecture is not a method, ladies and gentlemen. We say, well, lecture is a method. Problem solving is a method. Role playing is a method. No, it's not. These are learning activities. A lecture is a learning activity that can be used as an introductory tool for a lesson. It can be used in the midst of a lesson to expand the possibility. Lecture can be moved in and out of a lesson plan. It doesn't have to be lecture through the entire lesson plan. Lecture is a direct instruction activity. It is not a method. These things are called learning activities. And your lesson plans are made up of sundry and various kinds of learning activities. Now, in this family of direct instruction, there are all kinds of direct instruction learning activities. Do you all ever do a map study in your class? Do you all ever do map study? Hello, are you here? You all ever? Yes, thank you. I'm glad. I'm going to wake you up. I'll get you here in a minute. Do you do map study? Does your class sit there and talk to the map when you're doing map study? Okay, let me help you understand what direct instruction is. Direct instruction is a learning activity where information is given to the class members and they don't respond to it other than taking it in and listening to it. You don't generally stop a lecturer unless he stops and asks a question. And if the lecturer stops and asks a question, actually, the learning activity of lecture is gone. It's over. And he's moved into another family of learning activities. In fact, I have a little book up here called Classroom Questions, What Kinds? That's one of the finest books on how to ask questions that you could ever pick up. You can get it on Amazon. It's an old book. They're not even printed anymore, but you can get it on Amazon if you'll check in with them. And it is the finest book on helping you to understand how to ask questions. Let me show you one. If I should say to you, who went on the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus Christ? Name me the three men. Hello? Peter, James, and John. Okay, very simple question with one answer, right? Okay, that level is cognition. Now I'm going to ask that same question in another way, and I'm going to put it up into an adjudication. I'm going to move it up 7 levels. In that book, it teaches you how to ask questions at 7 different levels. The first one was, who went to the Mount of Transfiguration with Jesus? Peter, James, and John. Okay? Watch this one. On the Mount of Transfiguration, Jesus saw with his disciples 2 ancient biblical characters. One representing death by burial, the other representing death by ascension. What do you think Peter thought about those 2 former Old Testament characters appearing with Jesus, and what was their meaning to him? That's a little different than saying Peter, James, and John. Right? Now, do we need to learn how to take things to that level? In our Sunday school classes, do we need to learn to go there? When we study maps, you don't talk back to a map. We had a lady who worked for us for a while. When she came to work with my wife, she said to my wife, she said, now, I watch as the world turns every day at noon. And if I work for you, may I use my lunch hour to watch as the world turns? To which my wife said, certainly. So this little lady, very sweet little lady, she worked for us for 20 years, watched as the world turns every day at noon. I came in from the seminary one day, and she was in our den. And here's what I heard. Don't do that. Don't do that again. You know what happened to you the last time you did that. And I said, Barbara, who in the world is America talking to? She said, the television. She said, you see, this guy did the same thing with another woman earlier in this particular story, As the World Turns, and America's trying to get enough information to her not to do it again. We don't talk back to televisions, folks. In fact, when you go to a movie, you don't sit there and talk to the movie, do you? No, because all of that happens to be direct instruction. And we have multiple ways to do learning activities with direct instruction. I'll give you some more. These are all direct instruction activities, and they are developed to be put into lesson plans so that we can change the nature and the timbre and make our lessons less boring. Got it? Now, the thing about it is, most people don't understand that. In fact, if you look in any of your lesson materials, I don't care where you get it from, and I just picked up a quarterly. This is a quarterly from the Sunday School Board. It's Moral Bible. You all are very familiar with this quarterly. In this quarterly, this guy uses in one lesson 9 different learning activities. You can't teach without learning activities. Either you're going to lecture all the time, or either you're going to do group work all the time. You cannot teach without a learning activity. I was doing this conference in Atlanta, Georgia one time, and this little lady said to me, she said, I don't use learning activities. I said, really? How do you teach? She said, well, I start off by asking them to read a passage in the Bible. Well, she didn't realize what she was saying. I'll show you what she was doing in a few minutes when we get to the 3rd family of learning activities. And then she said, after I have them read a passage from the Bible, then I stand up and talk to them for about 10 minutes. Well, what'd she move from? She moved from reading a passage in the Bible on an individual basis to a lecture, right? She used 2 learning activities, but her statement to me was, I don't use learning activities. Folks, you can't teach without them. In fact, every time you teach, what you're doing is a learning activity of some kind. And I hope that somewhere along the way I will introduce all of these or at least remind you of what you're doing. So the first family of methods is direct instruction. And I showed you 14 different learning activities that you can take if you're writing your own Sunday school lesson. In fact, you ought to write your own Sunday school lesson. In fact, if you get this book or if you get a curriculum, if you get any kind of curriculum, you ought to take it and rewrite it for your own class, right? Because you know who writes this stuff? People like me and Jeff Young. And when we write this stuff, we're writing it 5 years before you get it. Are you all aware of that? That when you pick up a Sunday School Quarterly, it was written 5 years ago, and we write it not for your class. We're not writing for your class. Who are we writing for? Every time I write a Sunday School lesson, I write it for my class. I put it in a book. You take it, and you try to teach it to your class, and guess what? It doesn't work. Because it wasn't built for your class. It was built for my class. I wrote it for my class. And that's what all of the Sunday School writers do. Anywhere you get Sunday School curriculum material, they're going to be putting into their lesson plans learning activities, because you cannot teach without learning activities. Okay? Okay, so the first major method in teaching is what? Direct instruction. Let's look at a second. Group participation. Now, there's a whole family of learning activities and group participation. I know some teachers who say, I hate lecture, but I really like to get my class together and do a lot of questions and answers. I like to ask questions, and I like the class to answer. I like for the class to ask questions. I like for us to have a lot of conversation. Hey, I like small group teaching too. But oftentimes it depends on what kind of class you have as to whether or not you can use these kinds of learning activities. Sometimes your class will determine the kind of learning activity you have to use. These are these. If you have a class that doesn't talk, of what value is doing this kind of question and answer? Absolutely zippo, right? So, in this particular family of learning of method called group participation, there are a number of learning activities. Now, I have several books up here that were written by my colleague, Leroy Ford, before he passed away a couple of years ago, and he wrote a lot of books on learning activities. In fact, as you look at that lesson plan I gave you tonight, you will notice that each of the five parts in it says, you select the learning activities that will fit for this particular part of the lesson. Look, folks, you are the teacher. And in a few moments, I'm going to show you why you have to select the learning activities. You can't let a person like me, sitting somewhere in Fort Worth, Texas, writing material for Nashville, Tennessee, sending it to your desk, and you take it and trying to use my learning activities with your class. Your class may not like my learning activities. They may like yours a whole lot better, and I would hope so. I would hope they like your learning activities a whole lot better. So let's look at some. Problem solving. Brainstorming. Panel forum. Now, pause. What's the difference between a panel and a panel forum? Now, if I had time to take you back to the direct instruction, I could take you back there and show you that one of the learning activities I had listed in direct instruction was panel. What is a panel, ladies and gentlemen? I'm sorry? It's what Brother Greg did. He had four people up there with him. Each of the four people did what? Did you all talk to those four? No. They talked to each other. And Brother Greg asked questions, so they answered questions. So he did a little bit of group participation in Q&A. Are you with me? And then he did a lot of panel activity where each of them gave a suggestion for that. Now, a panel activity is a learning activity where information goes out but nothing comes back. Same thing could be true with the thing called role play. Role play is where people do a role play in front of you, and unless the teacher desires for you to talk, the role play can just be done and go off into some other kind of activity. But what if I said role play forum? What does that do? What does that little word forum do? I'm sorry? It involves everybody. So all of a sudden, forum is a learning activity which is in the family of group participation. When you have a forum, the group is going to have to... Now, could Brother Greg have done a forum with that crowd up there tonight? Sure he could. All he had to do is just stop for a moment and look down to the audience and say to some of you, what do you all think about this? And when he said, what do you all think about this, then he turned his panel, which was a direct instruction because they were getting you
turn that direct instruction into a forum group participation. Do you understand? Okay, now look what else is coming up here. Buzz group. What's a buzz group? Okay, listen. You two guys. I want you each to discuss this subject together for about 3 minutes. Why did Peter and James and John be chosen to go with Jesus on Mount Transfiguration? Go. Now, I shut up. I turn it over to you. Now, the group participation is acting. I've got buzz groups going. A buzz group is nothing more than two people talking. By the way, how many people does it take to make a group? Two. You get group. In fact, anytime you stop and have question and answer, what do you have? You have group participation with two people talking. Okay? Buzz group is where you ask them to talk about something, and in a few moments, what are you going to ask them to do? You're going to turn the buzz group into a forum. What they have discovered that they're going to share with the class, and the class will come back and talk about it. How about group discussion? Oh, while we're talking about group discussion, let me throw the next one in. What's the difference between those two? They're both group participation. What's the difference between a group discussion and a formal group discussion? Yeah, okay. Let's call it an agenda. Would that be fair? In group discussion, there's no agenda. You just throw out a question, or you throw out a subject, or you throw out a statement, and everybody jumps in and chews on it. And what do we call that? Group discussion. But if I walked up here and all of a sudden I put five things on the board up here and I said, all right, we're going to talk about these five things. I'm doing a lecture of what we're going to talk about. Then I back off and I say, okay, which of the five would you like to talk about first? And I turn it away from the group participation. You understand? And so formal discussion has an agenda, whereas group discussion does not. You could walk in class and say, all right, our scripture today was on the feeding of the 5,000. Why do you think Philip was asked where to go get food? And I'm waiting. Why do you think Philip, one of the disciples, was asked by Jesus at the feeding of the 5,000 by the city of Bethesda where to go get food? I'm waiting, teachers. You don't know.
He wanted to find out what Philip said.
Oh. Do y'all remember where Peter and Andrew were from? No, not just Galilee. Tell me where they were from in Galilee. Do you know what the word Beit Sada means? Beit Sada. B-E-T-H in Hebrew always means house. Sada is fisherman. Beit Sada. House of fishermen. Where were Peter and Andrew from, ladies and gentlemen? Bethsaida. So was Philip. Now, they're near Bethsaida. Here's 5,000 men and a bunch of women, a bunch of kids, and they're hungry. And Jesus looks at Philip and he says, Philip, since you're from here, do you know where the nearest Walmart might be? Got it? Ladies and gentlemen, that's why he asked Philip. Philip was from Bethsaida. And who should have known better where food was? Okay. All right, see, that's what happens in formal discussion. Why did he do that? Now we talk about it. You had all kinds, you were answering me, but all of them were wrong. Okay. We need to be wrong in order to find out where we can be right, right? All right, so you write informal discussion. Or you write in role play forum. Now, if we could go back to direct instruction, guess what it would appear there, without the forum attached? Role play. Because role play is a direct instruction activity. When you just get two or three or four people up here role playing a role. If you you don't get to talk about it, it's not a forum. If you don't get to talk about it, it's not a group activity, okay? Or what about picture analysis? You ever done picture analysis? That's where you get a, oh, by the way, your preschool departments have wonderful Bible pictures. Have you figured that one out yet? Go borrow some from them. But be sure you bring them back, okay? If you borrow, they're big pictures and they're wonderful Bible pictures. And you can take one of those Bible pictures and hold it up in front of your adult Sunday school class, and you can say to them, this is the story of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. What do you think Mary is saying to Martha? Now, what's the story on that day? What's the scripture text on that day? Mary and Martha and Lazarus in Beit Bethany. In Bethany. Now, I just said it the way it's supposed to be said, Bethany. You know what that means? House of figs. House of figs. Oh, have you ever been to Beit Lechem? We call it Bethlehem. Beit Lechem. House of bread. Lechem. Beit Lechem. We call it Bethlehem. Beit Ani. House of figs. Beit Al. House of dates. All of these baits are house of something. And so you hold up the picture and you say, what do you think Mary and Martha? Now, you've just been studying the fact that Mary is always about wanting things to be done how, and Martha is always just the opposite. What's the story about today, folks? The story today is about Mary and Martha and their different personalities. We've already read that scripture in class. We've talked about their different personalities. I hold up the picture and I say to you, what do you think Mary is saying to Martha? Now, if you could answer that, what would you say? Knowing Mary and Martha's characteristics and personality, what would you think Mary is saying to Martha? Hey, let it go. Why are you so worried about it? It's going to pan out in the end. Do you have a Mary in your house? I have a Martha in mine. Okay? And so we have, okay. We come with case study. It's a whole book on how to do a case study. Oh, by the way, case study. Oh, all of these that I'm showing you have at one time or other appeared in all of the Southern Baptist Adult Sunday School literature as suggested. You see, folks, all of this stuff in here that they give you is simply suggestion of how to teach this lesson. But they don't know who your class is. They don't know what your class needs. They don't know how you need to teach this lesson. This is a suggestion. All of these learning activities are suggested. How are you, as the adult teacher, going to take them and put them into a lesson plan? That's why I gave you the two lesson plans to start with. All right, I'm going to run through these, because I got to get through. Case study, sociodrama, debate forum, interview, question and answer, Q&A, listening teams. You ever done a listening team? Listening teams are fun. That's where you take your class and divide it into three, four parts. Yeah, how many parts do you want to? Most of the time I do it with two. And I put one group down here, one group down here. And I say, okay, I am going to read the story of our lesson today, which is the story of Abraham talking to Lot about Sodom and Gomorrah. And I want listening team number one over here to listen to what Abraham said. That's all I want you to hear. Don't pay any attention to Lot. Want you to pay attention to what Abraham said. And listening team two over here, I want you to listen to what Lot heard. Not necessarily what Lot said, but what Lot heard. Do you know the end product of that particular conversation? Lot took the plains toward Sodom. And Abraham got the hill country. Lot took the fertile place. And Abraham got the rocks and rivers. That was the end product. And you just read, then you read the passage, you read the scripture. And you let both of the teams start talking about what they heard. That's called listening teams. symposium forum, our field trips, our drama clips, you ever do a drama clip? Our small study groups, experiments in a group, our conversation groups. All of these are actually group participation. Now, that's the second family. First family is what? Telling. Second family is what? Telling each other. Now watch. See, the first one is telling. The second one is telling each other. The fourth one, the third one is telling yourself. Oh, have you all ever in your Sunday school class said, would you please read verse number 3 silently for a moment? And would you read verse number 4? And would you read verse number 5? And would you read verse number 7? And would you read verse number 6? And would you all read it silent? And the rest of you, would all of you just read all of those verses collectively? And so everybody is real quiet. And they are individually instructing themselves. Okay, how do we teach people? We can either tell them, or we can let them tell each other, or we can let them fight it out by themselves. It's called individual instruction. Here's some of the family of individual instruction. Reading books. Us professors love that one. If you ever went to any kind of class, you got that one. I mean, that is the finest individual instruction piece you'll ever read. Or, how about audio tapes? Or, how about videotapes? Or, how about DVDs and CDs? Or, how about movies? Or, how about experiments on an individual basis? Or, how about an observation? You don't do observations in groups. Or, how about attitude scales? Or, how about creative writing? Or, how about paraphrasing? Have you ever paraphrased in your class? Have you ever allowed your class to paraphrase a scripture passage? That's simply individual. I mean, we don't do paraphrasing in groups, folks. Nor can I tell you about a paraphrasing. Paraphrasing has to be done by who? It has to be done by you. Okay? Or we can have the computer. Boy, that one's come a long way. We got a lot of, how many people have total degrees on a computer? It's called online education. Hate it. There is no interaction on it. So what we've done, we put in a Skype, and now we bring them to us, and we do it online and talk to them on the Skype. We have a pretty good program for it. Survey, our checklist, our dramatic presentation. Now, all of these are individual instruction. So, I'd like to ask you a question. Do any of you all know any other way? Do you know any other way to teach? How? Okay, but acting out a story is what? Group participation, right? I'm serious. Let me guess. Isn't that group participation? When they act out a story? Yeah. Or let them do it by themselves. If they do it by themselves, okay, I want you to take a little job. I want you to act like Abraham. Okay? He's going to do it how? With a group? No. He's going to do it individually. So you're back to individual instruction. I'm serious, folks. I have searched this world over. For 50 years, I've been teaching. I cannot find any other way to teach. So, since there are no other ways to teach, then it would appear to me we need to learn how to use these learning activities built into our lesson plan, right? And since you want to teach your class and you don't want to teach my class, then you have to do your own learning activities. That's why I gave them to you tonight. Yes, sir.
What would guided learning part fall under?
Depends on how you do it.
Whereas you give a project, course with an agenda, but instead of giving instructions on how to do it, you guide them along.
You tell me what that would be. He said, what if you do a project and you slide is crucial. This is something very few Sunday school teachers ever do. And this particular slide answers the question, how to determine what needs to be taught. Now, watch. In these lessons, we write what's called an aim. I don't care what you call it. Some people call it an aim, some people call it a goal, some people call it an outcome, some people call it a purple cap. It really doesn't matter what you call it as long as you know what it is. And if you notice the two lesson plans I gave you, the very first thing is the word outcome, right? Is that what I put on it? Or did I put aim? Learning outcome. Okay. Here's where I come from. That's what I want to come out of this lesson when we're through. I want a learning outcome, a learning aim, a learning goal. You call it anything you want to call it. Now, here's the deal. I wrote the aim in here. So the aim in here is going to color this entire lesson, correct? And so I'm going to write this lesson in this book to accomplish this aim. That's why when you pick up this material and you start looking at it, you can't teach this to your class unless your class needs exactly what this teacher was teaching, which I doubt very seriously it's going to need. So what happens? Well, here's what you do. You ask yourself the question from this lesson, and you get yourself a piece of paper, and you do an individualized brainstorm with yourself. And you ask yourself this question. From this body of scripture, what can be learned? And then as you start answering that question, you start writing them down. What can be learned from this scripture? Okay, let's take the scripture and think about it for a moment. Let's take the scripture of Christ coming to the temple in the sixth and seventh chapter of the book of John, where he shows up on a morning during the Feast of Tabernacles. And he does something that sounds really strange. He stands up in the middle of that temple on that morning, the last great day of the Feast of Tabernacles, and he says, the whole crowd, I am the water of life. Why? Y'all know why? Well, let me just take you one step further. That afternoon, just after sundown, he stands up in the same temple and he says, oh, by the way, I am also the light of the world. Why? Now, unless you understand Jewish tabernacle of feast, you don't know why. I'm getting ready to tell you why. The Feast of Tabernacles is an eight-day feast. It starts on Sunday, it ends on Sunday. And every morning during that week, Tabernacles is Mardi Gras for the Jews. It is the most hilarious, it is the most fun, it is the most enjoyable feast. They eat more during the Feast of Tabernacles than they eat all year. It's like Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving and Easter all putting together on one meal. I've been to some Feast of Tabernacles and I ate so much I couldn't move. Now, let me help you understand why I can tell you this. At the seminary, I teach Jewish educational history. In fact, I'm teaching a course on that now. The Feast of Tabernacles had two major activities that happened every day. Started on Sunday, ended on Sunday. Every day a priest went to the temple and with a band, he had a literal band, a musical band, had flutes and pipes and trumpets and drums and all kinds of stuff. And they had a parade. They had a Mardi Gras parade. And he went to the temple and he picked up a golden pitcher. And he comes out of the backside of the temple going down toward the valley of Kidron, which is where the eastern gate comes into. And he goes with this picture, and this whole crowd of people, thousands of people with the band follow him. It's a Mardi Gras parade. And they go down to the Pool of Siloam. You know where the Pool of Siloam is? Down at the other end of the temple? Do you know why they go to the Pool of Siloam? Do you know why Jesus sent the blind man to the Pool of Siloam? Do you all realize that when Jesus put the clay on that guy's eyes and sent him to the Pool of Siloam, he had to pass five pools of water? Why didn't he go into any of those? I'll tell you why. The Pool of Siloam in Jerusalem, ladies and gentlemen, this day is the only pool that is fed by living water. It is fed by the spring of Gihon that goes under the temple and comes out in the Pool of Siloam. Paul is in the city of Philippi. And it's a Sabbath day. And he says to Silas, Silas, let's go down to the river. Why? You see, ladies and gentlemen, for a Jew to worship on the Sabbath, that Jew has to have living water. And living water is only running water. So the Apostle Paul is in the city of Philippi where there's no synagogue, and he knows that there's Jews there. And if there are Jews there, and there's a river right down the street, if a Jew's going to worship on the Sabbath, what does the Jew have to have to worship? Running water. So he goes down to the river, and who does he find down by the riverside? She was a seller of purple. She was a Jew. And she was down there worshiping. And Paul goes down, because he knew that if there were any Jews in town, guess where they would be? Down by the riverside, down by. You think that's just a song? Okay. So this priest, with his crowd and his parade, he goes down to the Pool of Siloam, and he dips this pitcher into the pool. And then they parade all the way back up. It's about a two-mile trip. And they parade all the way back up to the temple, and they all walk with him, and he goes to the altar, and he pours that water all around the altar. It's called a water libation. And he does it for 7 days. And the last great day, which is the eighth day, he takes the pitcher, they have the parade, he goes down to the Pool of Siloam, and when he gets to the Pool of Siloam, he says, God himself shall provide the water of life, and he gets no water. And he comes back to the temple with an empty pitcher. And when he gets back to the temple with an empty pitcher, I'm going to let him go. I'm going to keep him a few minutes longer. Can I hang him a minute? Y'all want to stay? You want to go? You want to stay. And he holds up the pitcher, and he says, there is no water in this pitcher from the water of life. Therefore, God himself shall provide the water of life. Follow the scripture in 3 verses. It says, and Jesus stood up in the temple in the morning, and he said, ladies and gentlemen, I am the water of life. Okay? That's why he did it on that day. They didn't get any water. He did. Okay. Now, Feast of Tabernacles. At nighttime, they burned 4 huge candle arbors, menorahs. And every night they would light them. Now, you got to remember, the Jewish day goes from sundown to sundown. In fact, right now, it's already Saturday for the Jews. It won't be Saturday for you till midnight. That's when we get the midnight madness. That's when we get the whatever. Okay? Now, they have these big, big candles. Every night they light them. Every night they dance and party. I told you it's Mardi Gras. But on the last great day, when the sun goes down, what happens to the feast? It's over. And they're not going to light the candles on that last day, because when the sun goes down, when they lighted them at even, it's over. And just as the sun was going down and they were lighting no candles, Jesus walked up again and he said, oh, by the way, I also get to tell you all, I am also the light. sun nor moon. For God himself is the... Ladies and gentlemen, that's the last chapter of the book of Revelation. And the last chapter of the book of Revelation, you get water and light. Because the greatest, hilarious feast of the Jews is Tabernacles. And that's what we're going to have when we all get together. Okay? You with me? I'd love to have you all for about 3 hours. I think I could help us all. Okay. What can be learned? What can be learned from the scripture? All right, once you figure that out, what do they already know? Have you figured out how boring it is to teach the same people the same thing they've already learned? So you as a teacher have to figure out what they already know. Well, how do you know what they already know? Right here. By visitation, by observation, by fellowship, by listening, by class responses. You listen to them. You talk with them. You visit with them. You go with them. You're with them every day. You're with them on Sunday. You visit them during the week. You go to the hospital. You go to the funeral home. You go to the weddings. You go to their childbirth. You do everything. You listen to them. You learn what they already know. Don't teach it to them again. So when you take this and you subtract it from this, then you have this. And that tells you what you need to teach, not what you want to teach. Now, gang, let me tell you something. Most teachers teach what they want to teach, not what their class needs. I work at that desperately every week because I've been teaching this class for 16 years. I've been through Genesis with them twice. I'm going through Genesis with them again. I'm on chapter 7 Sunday, 6 and 7, Noah and the flood. They know more about Noah and the flood than Carter has in little pills. So now I've got to work out some stuff to help them learn some stuff that they don't know yet. Okay? All right, I'm going to show you the last slide in this series. And it says, how to determine what needs to be learned. Well, I got to get by this. Excuse me. I didn't know she gave all this to you. She wasn't supposed to give all that to you. I sent her a different overhead. Ah, that's what I wanted. Here is how you build a lesson plan. Watch. You decide what you want to accomplish. What is your aim, goal, outcome, objective, blue cow, purple rain, whatever. What do you want to accomplish? How do you know what you want to accomplish? By this. You know what you want to accomplish because you know the people. Okay? So when you figure out what you want to accomplish and you know the people, then you come here. What learning activities from the three families, direct instruction, group participation, individual instruction, what learning activities do I need to use here in order to reach here? Got it? Are you with me? Say yes.
Yes.
Okay, say yes. Please say yes. Okay, I hope you're with me. Okay, when you figure this one out, then you have to ask yourself, what material or equipment do I need? Hey, if you're going to play a video clip, you better have, right? If you're going to have a map study, you better have, that's material and equipment. And by the way, if you want them to have, when I was dean of the School of Education for 23 years, I had a philosophy with my faculty. You never did a lecture or you never taught a class until the student had the material on the desk, the material on the overhead, and the material coming from you. We called it hands-on, eyes-on, heads-on learning. You put your hands on it on the desk. You put your eyes on it on the board. You put your head on it as the professor talks to you. Head-on, hands-on, eyes-on learning. We did it every day. So you figure out what you're going to need. You need a videotape machine. Do you need a map? What do you need? Where did you find out what you're going to need from here? If you're going to do a video clip here, which is a learning activity, you better have a video machine, right? Okay. Then, how are you going to arrange this thing? By the way, does your class come into the same arrangement every Sunday? Shame, shame, shame. When my class comes in, if the chairs are in twos facing each other, I can hear them talking. We're going to have a buzz group today. Terry's going to have a buzz group. Here the chairs are. If they come in and the chairs are this way and this way and
that way and this way, I can hear them say, we're going to do a listening team today. Or if they come in and they're all in military roles, I hear them say, he's going to lecture today. See, this tells you even how to arrange your space. And it also tells you if you need additional help. By the way, sometimes you want to bring somebody else in, right? Sometimes, in order to achieve this, you may need to bring in this. Sometimes you may need to bring your preacher in. Or your minister of agitation, Brother Ben, you know, bring him in. I was called the monster of agitation in the churches I served in because every time someone's class would really get to growing, I would rearrange it. And they called me the monster of agitation. They said every time their class got to growing, I'd agitate them to have a new class. Oh, went to a church running 800 in Sunday school. 4 years, left that church to go teach at the seminary. We were running 3,000 in Sunday school. I reorganized the Sunday school 9 times. And every time we reorganized it, we grew. If you come to my next session, I'll tell you why we grew. The next session talks on how do you grow. Okay? And finally, if you get all this done, then you can evaluate. And the question is, did I reach my outcome? Got it? Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's the way you teach. And if you're going to write your own Sunday school lesson, you better figure out how to use learning activities, or else you're going to be a bore. And what your class will find you doing every Sunday is the same cotton-picking thing. And that's boring, right? Yes, sir. Okay, I've got a gift to give away, and I made a determination that whoever sat in that chair would get the gift. I told him before you came in, whoever sat in the third chair, third row, would get the gift. Okay? Oh, don't come back in next time and sit there, because it's okay. Hey, thank you. Did you learn anything tonight?
Yes, sir.
Was that all right? Thank you. Bye. See ya. Hey, my pleasure.